Good evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. Very good. Nothing heard. That's the right answer. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Net is open to all radio amateurs. Operates on the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club 2-meter repeater. We thank them for the use of their repeater. And we welcome all radio amateurs to participate in the net. This net is a conversation about amateur radio, electronics, telecommunications, computing, the natural phenomena that supports our activities, the underlying science, the activities that we do with it, what makes it go, what makes us happy, what makes us sad, what makes us interested, what really cranks us, and we try to talk about all these things. So pretty much you can talk about anything you like. You can tie it to one of those subjects in one of those modes. So, with no further ado, we also have a further request. Please check in even if you have no question or comment or a for sale or swap item for the net. We welcome everybody to participate, and it makes it easier to manage the net if we know who's there, even if you don't have a question, comment, or for sale or swap item. You check in with your call sign, your name, and you indicate whether you have a question, a comment, for sale or swap item, some combination of those things, or none of the above. None of the above is a perfectly good response. And with that, let's try the alpha call first. K2BAR. Okay, nothing heard. How about the November call?
Say what? This is.
Go ahead, Noel, first.
This is N2OEO. On question.
Thank you, Noel. Who is the other November trying to check in?
This is N2IZE, November 2, India Zebra Echo. No questions at this time.
Very good. N2IZE, W2, TTT, K2BAR. Where are you located and what's your name, sir?
My name here is John. I'm located in Yonkers, New York. And I'm portable right now, just a little ways away from home. So when I get back to the house, we'll switch over to the outdoor antenna, and we'll be listening in.
Okay, John, no problem. Thank you very much. Are there any other November stations? Okay, Whiskey Station.
This is to Juliet Echo Kilo. Nothing, none of the above.
W2NPR, Hector. No questions or comments at this time.
WI2, LYP, still no questions or comments.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Any others? I just got a check-in via a text message. He doesn't hear the net. From W2LCN, Rick. He's up in Newington taking the teacher's training course. The Interval Teachers Institute, and he says the Teachers Institute was full of great resources, and the folks here deserve a sincere thanks for making the whole thing come together. I will catch up next net. Signed, W2LCN. That's super. All right, any other whiskeys? Okay, kilos.
This is K2AMI, Tony. No questions, no comments, but this thing.
Thank you, Tony. Any other kilos?
KD2DDK, nothing.
Good evening, Gary. Any other kilos? Alrighty. Any other stations? Any call signs? I'm just going over my notes here. I have one question from N2OEL, and I have a couple comments from me, some of which I'm going to give in a moment before we take Noel's question. Did I miss anybody in this roll call? Alrighty. For sale or swap item, Gary and I each have a pile of green, 4 foot long fiberglass military poles. We are selling them for $5 for $20. We can deliver within reasonable distances of, you know, Bergen and Passaic County. And, of course, we'll bring a pile of them up to Sussex on Sunday. Hope to see a lot of people at Sussex on Sunday just for the fun of it, let alone for making sales, but it should be a lot of fun. And I'll reserve my comments on the fireworks. Everything went very, very well, though, overall. So, any last check-ins or, before we move to our first question? This is K2BAR.
This is Kilo Charlie 2, Uniform November Hotel. Paul, one question.
Okay, Paul, I'll register your question. Welcome aboard. Anybody else with or without questions, comments, confusions, for sale or swap, whatever, over. All right, Antonio, it's all yours. KTBAR, how did the closing go?
Oh, there's two closings. We closed at 11 o'clock Eastern Time on the 3 acres in Lucedale, Mississippi. And believe it or not, they didn't even need my signature in person. They sent me a email that said, sign here, scan it, and send it back. That's what I did. All done. Lawyer handled it. The other closing is now scheduled for Wednesday. And in New York State, they're a little more fussy. They want me to actually physically sign the documents, so I should be getting them tomorrow by FedEx or United States Postal Service next day. Okay, really two questions. The first question, if I have an 80 and 160 meter antenna, that's going to be a fan dipole, and the center of the antenna is about 250 feet from where my shack is going to be. The question is, I have some 8814, which is that nice heavy cable, solid polyurethane, dielectric. If I run 250 feet of that, then I'm going to need a small piece of 8X, I guess, to feed the antenna in the center. So I'll need another 50 feet, maybe. So it'll be 300 feet total. Am I going to have any serious losses in that?
Okay, so the frequencies of operation are 160 and 80 meters. Is that correct?
That is correct. The other one, 40 through 6, I'm going to put nice and close. I got room there.
Okay, I don't think so. But let me ask you this question. Why are you inserting the 8X now?
I don't want to have 8814 or 9913 hanging up in the air in the middle of a dipole.
Is that an unsupported point? Is that the problem?
Yeah, let's see. What is, I got a nice tall tree on each end, but nothing in the center.
How tall would that seed point be from the ground?
Well, the tree is supposed to be 70 or 80 feet. So I figure there's going to be some sag. So I figure I could get this stuff over to it and go up with a piece of RG8X. I won't know until I'll measure it, actually, once I get there.
Pretty nifty. Well, to answer your first question, I don't think there's appreciable loss. Have you thought about running coax out that distance and then with a ballon, and even without a ballon, just going the ladder line to go up to the feed point?
I thought about it, but then I would have to, if I really wanted it to work correctly, since the feed point is approximately 50 ohms, and ladder line is used, well, if you use twin lead, 300, if it's ladder line, 450. In order to mirror it properly, I would need a half wavelength lane, or a multiple of a half wavelength on both 80 meters and 160.
Maybe. I'm not really sure. I'll be real honest. Based on what I've learned in not too distant past, I think you'll be just fine just taking a length of ladder line and going up to it and either using a balun or not using a balun to the transition. I personally would consider using a balun, but I wouldn't use 8X. I'll tell you that straight out.
Okay. That's actually very doable. I would just have to put a post there in the ground and run my coax up it and then put the balun up high enough. And I've learned up there the people doing weed whacking will cut coaxial cables. So if you have a coaxial cable coming up from the ground, you put you box it in with wood on all four sides for at least the first foot or two.
I see. So basically you would you'd make like a planter's box a foot high and a foot square or 2 feet square and have the coax come out of the ground within the confines of that box. Is that the idea?
More like I take running a vertical. It doesn't have to be much for it. It's just a bound, so it could be a 2x4, and I could use a couple of what do you call those things? Like railings. They're like 1 1/8 by 1 1/8 approximately. Put those in and then put another 2x4 on the other side. All you want is wood around it, so when the weed whacker hits it, it cuts the wood and not the cable.
Sounds marvelous. Is that because that you can't control how they trim the grass on your own property?
Actually, I'm hiring the next door neighbor to do it. He's been doing it for the last 25 years, and we're just going to continue doing it the same way. He has a riding lawn tractor, and he drives it around to mow, and I believe the weed whacker is built into it the way it was described to me. So he just drives next to whatever it is he's mowing, and the weed whacker whacks the weeds at the same time.
Very good. So you would take like a 4x4, put it in the ground a couple of feet, and then maybe 4 to 6 feet in the air, you would mount the balun and do the transition.
Yes, something like that. I thought about using 450 all the way, but the problem is I got to go underneath the power line, and I always am wary about accidents happening. If I have the 8814 and I'm going to put it in a piece of pipe and it's going to be in the ground, so I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, I would give that an A+ on the prudence scale. Alright, very good. Anybody have any thoughts for Noel on this?
Good, kid.
Go ahead, Jim.
This is K2ZO checking in. I didn't hear all of the last conversation, but I think I know what you're trying to do, Noel. Back to that.
Okay. Yes. So, Noel, why don't you restate your question and your understanding of the answer I gave, and while we bounce off of Jim and others, K2BAR.
Okay. We're closing on the house upstate next Wednesday. I closed on the 3 acres in Hoosdale, Mississippi, 11 o'clock this morning. Okay. The house, the property, is approximately 341 by 66. It's cut approximately at the 1/3 point by a power line that goes from the power pole that feeds my house right across the property and feeds the neighbor's house. I don't want to run any open wire line or any antennas under, near, or any place close to the power wire. So I happen to have 200 feet of 8214 that we bought years ago, never been used, sitting downstairs. It's a heavy cable, I believe 13-gauge center conductor. I believe it's the solid polyurethane. And we're talking about strictly 80 and 160 meters, no other band, because the other bands I could fit in the front and have nice short lanes, because of 10 meters, you really don't want to run, you run a couple hundred feet of coax. So at the first question was, on 8,860 meters, if I have, say, 250 feet of coax, then a 4-to-1 bow and go straight up with 450-ohm ladder line. I was discussing that up there, the guy that mows it somehow has the weed whacker on his tractor, and he just drives that thing around like a... Reports have it, he speeds, and he just cuts both his lawn and the lawn that I buy it. At one time, he's been doing it for 20, 25 years, and somehow he just drives next to the building, and the weed whacker cuts the weeds. So I mentioned that I would enclose any cable coming out of the ground up a few feet. And Gordon had suggested a 2-foot by 2-foot box. I said no, or 1-foot by 1-foot. I said no, it's just a, you know, 4 by 4 up, couple 1 by 1, what do you call them, railing posts with another 2 by 4. Just make a box for the cable that comes up, and that's it. So the question was, how much loss would there be, and would that be practical, and would I have to use a half wavelength long at 80 meters of the 450 ohm line?
No, that's not going to work, because that's only going to work on one frequency. Running 450 down to a bound, and then running 200 foot back a coax doesn't make sense, because the SWR at that point on that line may be very high, depending on the frequency you're at, in which case the losses will go up tremendously on the coax, even on 80 meters. I would run the 450 right underneath the power line, and I would run it close to the pole. Don't have to attach it to it if that belongs to the power company. I would put a vertical pole, keep the thing at, you know, just above your head, and I would run it right close to the pole. The reason being is if the wire falls, think about it. If you've got a piece of wire and you've got two poles, and underneath it is this open wire line, if the wire snaps off and breaks and it falls down, it's not going to hit it close to it. It's going to swing down and drop away from it. So it would never touch it. That's what I would do. Of course, you could always put something to protect it or whatever. And you could always put a some way to protect it as it comes in the house, which is the... just to put a coil to ground. That's what they do. They put a coil to ground to protect, you know, lightning and stuff like that, which is a good idea. And that would save you if any power line dropped on it. But that power line, I guess, is only 220, so that's no big deal. Back to that, K20.
Hey, one other thought. How about getting the power line buried?
That's expensive.
Yeah, it is, but... This is on a private line, so, you know, if you hire a guy with a ditch witch, and then is it public power or an electrician that's going to have to bury the cable?
Public power. It'd have to be New York State Electric and Gas.
Okay, why does it have to come across your property to get to their house? Why can't they put a pole in front of that property and bring it down?
Because... somehow, when they did the road many years ago, and it was rural electrification, they elected not to run the power line straight down alongside the road. It was unaesthetic. The power line runs about 100 feet past my property. Well, that's the high voltage, what is it, 4,400 or whatever, along. And it's parallel to the road. And each house gets fed by 200 or 300 foot of that high voltage wire coming in. There's a transformer right next to the back of my house, and it feeds my house and the house next to me. And the, I'm sure there's an easement right across my property for the New York State Electric Power wire.
Wow, so you've got Hy-Vee right in front of your house. And then they still bring it back to the back across your property to a pole pig, and then they go further across your property to your neighbor's house.
Yikes.
The pole transformer is by the back of the house. However, my radio station is going to be like 60 feet away from there, and the 20 and 40 is going to be well away from there. And if I can figure out a way to feed that 160 antenna, or 80 and 160, without, can't use open wire to feed it. That was my first thought, just feed it all the way. Problem is, it's unaesthetic. The neighbor next door, my sister pointed out to me, you know, it's going to be bad enough that I'm having the two antennas in front and the 80 and 160 in the back. He would object to 450 ohm because I'd need a whole series of stakes to hold it up. And it also would be running parallel to one leg of the antenna, which is another reason why I wanted to use coax and bury it so that it wouldn't be running underneath the antenna. Say the antenna is at 40 or 50 feet, and I'd have this open wire directly underneath the antenna at 10 feet.
I don't know. It sounds like a mess. So there's no way for you to run a remote tuner on this post. Maybe that's another way of doing it, so that, as Jim points out, you want to make sure that the antenna is resonant at the feed point or at the balun point, as the case may be, because you don't want to have high residual losses due to impedance mismatch coming back down that coax.
I could do that, but is it worth it for a house to be used 2 or 3 months of the year?
Well, that's a different matter, you know. So I was playing ham radio almost every day, 2 or 3 months of the year from that location. There'd be a 100-foot tower there.
I could do. I could go, you know, 100, whatever the maximum legal limit is. There are no building codes for that. There's building codes for the well. There's building codes for the septic system. And there's some electrical codes for the house. But these farmers build so many things their own. I don't even know if there is a building inspector for stuff like that. 100-foot tower, just put it up, is what they told me.
Well, my suggestion is that you get your pitchfork and your coveralls on and your straw hat when you do, and keep it on until every day until you leave to make sure that you get treated the same way as the farmers do.
Forget the suspenders. They, after all, are Mennonites, which are very close to the Amish and to Oya.
I was suggesting that you do it with coveralls instead of suspenders, because coveralls, you know, distinguish you as a farmer, but not as a Mennonite farmer. Anyway, Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, one good thing about having those Amish people living next to you, you don't ever have any TVI. I could just see Noel out there in his bib overalls with his straw hat on out there in the back 40. Noel, did you say that the width of the property was 67 feet and 320 feet long?
66 by 341.
Interesting piece of property. Well, I don't know if you are worried about the aesthetics of it, but I can tell you that would be a great antenna, that it would open wire line. Of course, you could always feed it with 300 ohm line. The losses are negligible, as well as the 450, and that would work. And that looks just like TV lead-in, and certainly wouldn't be too objectionable to everybody, but I guess you'd need some support for it. But you wouldn't need to put a lot of support. You know, you'd have to put you could put a run of 100 foot of it with two little supports.
I could do that, sure. And I have that balanced line tuner here. What is it? The MFJ 396 that I could fire on that.
A Well, I'm sure you can have something, but I wouldn't worry about, you know, again, you get into aesthetics. Why would your neighbor care if you did that on your property? I don't understand that.
Number one, they're rather close. I think this is a mother-daughter, because the person that I buy it from is the daughter, and her father, she looks to be about 55, and they're moving to Virginia to be close to her daughter, who has 6 children. Meanwhile, her parents live next door, and somehow I think this property got split off. I think this was the original property. Somebody bought it years and years ago, and then the parents built that grand house and let their daughter and her husband buy this house. And I believe that for whatever reason, that's how it was split, because they have a very palatial house next door. And I don't want to be objectionable. The problem that I'm having is I can run it very unobtrusively on the other side of my property. Unfortunately, it would be about 3 feet away from electric fence. And I'm not sure I want to run 450 ohm underneath the 4400 power line and 3 feet from electric fence. 450 ohm.
If you've got an electric fence nearby, you're going to get killed. Is it on all the time? Is it the newer ones are okay. The older ones are real bad.
Most of the time, these farmers put it on only when the cows are new. The cows are not stupid. They get zapped a few times, and then the farmer doesn't waste the electricity anymore.
Yeah, okay. Well, why don't you disguise an antenna as a cow?
Fractal antenna?
Yeah, that'll do it. But I'm sure you could do something. I still like the idea of open wire line. Remember, you could run it all over the place. Doesn't matter how many feet you run of it. Even if you put the supports away from the neighbor, put it in the center, let's face it, the chances of something falling on it are rather slim. And of course, you could negate any problem like that by merely providing a DC ground for it at the house where the line comes in, a choke to ground, and that way anything hit it, boom, that'll stop it.
It's doable, and there would be no problem feeding a 50 ohm antenna with 450 without having to put a bound there or reverse 4-to-1.
I'm here. I just went to check something. First of all, forget about the bound. Come off the antenna with a 450 ohm line and bring it back into the tuner, and that's all you need. Don't worry about the length of the antenna. Put up something that's longer than a half wavelength, and don't worry about the shape of it. It'll work for it.
That was a long. The second question is, the Hawaiian Radio Club emergency antenna uses a 9-to-1 bound. Now, if you've decided to feed a half wavelength antenna, which I understand has an impedance of 2,000 ohms approximately, and you're working it against the coax shield, same as the Hawaiian Radio Club's emergency antenna, would you need more than a 9-to-1? Wouldn't you leave it at 16-to-1 or 20-to-1? Back to that, Mr. William.
You have to take a look at what happens at the end of a half wavelength length of wire. The answer is yes and no. If you were feeding an antenna like that, and it's a half wavelength long, and you've got a 9-to-1 balance, if you take a look at the impedance at the end of the one wavelength, we're talking a half wavelength of antenna. If you take a look at the impedance at the end of a half wavelength of antenna, it is very, very high. However, as you move in, the impedance drops quite a bit. So if you look at the thing, and it could be in the order of, as you say, a few thousand ohms right at the end. What you need to do is move in just about 3 or 4%. So you take that half wave and you feed it with that 9-to-1 balance about 5 or 6 feet in. At that point, the impedance will be close to what that balance is set to match. That's another little thing I never told you, but that will work.
I think you're making an offset.
You're really kind of an end fed, but you're not right at the end. That's nothing new. I didn't come up with it. It's been around for a long, long time. And it works.
And my question for today, I'm sure we're boring everybody. N2OL, back to net.
Yeah, K2BAR. Did you get my question, Jim?
You had a question?
Yeah, apparently my other radio is not working for some reason. What my question was is, so you're taking your half-wave dipole and shortening it by 4 or 5% in order to come up with a different impedance point. Is that what you're doing?
What I'm doing is I'm feeding it in like an off-center fed antenna. But kind of a more radical off-center fed. You stick a short counterpoise out the other side. So the length of the counterpoise is plus the length of the antenna equals 1/2 wavelength. So in other words, in an 80 meter antenna, that might be a 10 foot piece you've moved in about 8 or 10 feet to feed it. At that point, you won't have that extremely high impedance that Noel was talking about. You'll have an impedance that's up around, 800-900 ohms, something that's more suitable for that 9-to-1 bound.
I gotcha. A little slow on the uptake. I gotcha. So you're treating it like an OCF, like an extreme OCF. All right, very good. That makes sense to me. That is certainly liven the things up. I'm wondering if anybody else in here wants to make a comment on the subject. Alrighty. Jim, any last ones before you hand it back to Noel?
Nope, but I do love open wire line. Nice low losses. We had great success with the 80 meter off-center fed antenna. We were feeding it with 450 ohm. About 88 feet of line to a 4-to-1 current balance. We did put an isolator on it, too. I don't know if we really needed it, but we put it on just a line isolator. And that antenna we used on field day on 40 and 80. It was so broadbanded that we used the LDG tuner. One hit on the tuner, and then we could move the whole phone band or the whole CW band. And not have to hit the tuner again on both 40 and 80 meters. It also tuned, that antenna tuned with the LDG from 6 to 80 meters, including the warp bands, and worked fine.
That's pretty cool. So you were able to generate quite a good signal and get your impedances all squared away just by doing that. That's pretty good. And you were happy with the result, which is even better. Alrighty. Noel, back to you on 2OL, K2BAR.
Actually, I thought I'm done with everything, so I turned it back to Ned. This is N2OL.
Just wanted to be sure. Okay, very good. Before we go to Paul, are there any other check-ins for the net? K2BAR. Mr. Paul, it's all yours, KC2UNH, W2TTT, K2BAR.
K2BAR, KC2UNH. Yeah, just one question. Just before that, my first few lengths of Heliac showed up today. That looks amazing, that stuff. Unbelievable. Very, very impressed. But my question, finally getting around to playing with DX, playing around, trying to work a station, there's someone close, well not close, but 2 kilohertz above, just absolutely killing it. So I'm sort of wondering how much interference should you expect to see from the station above you, and at what point can you turn around and go back up 2 kilohertz and say, you know what, go fix your station. KC2UNH, back to that.
Well, the one joke would be when you want to get your ass kicked, just knock on the door. I don't know. 2 kilohertz a half a mile away is tough. It just is. So I think that's your first dilemma to just even think, contemplate. But it can be done. I would just try it really, really peaceably.
KC2UNH, he wasn't actually close to me physically. I was a case of I'm trying to work Italy, and he's in, like, North Carolina, and just absolutely killing me.
Friendly emails might work, but... you know, 2 kilohertz, you know, for a lot of stations, that should be workable, in all honesty. Hold on, battery problem, standby battery. Okay, that's better. So, you know, what radio are you using?
I'm using my ICOM 7000. The guy, you know, when I went up there, he's basically going on that he was having shack problems. And, you know, basically pumping up power to compensate for that. So I don't know if that was part of it.
Well, there you go. And his signal kind of distorted or just ultra wide? Or was he just playing strong and appropriately wide given the strength of his signal overall?
No, he was just ultra-wide.
Well, then you hope you don't trip over him. Could you narrow your filters any better?
I tried that, but, you know, basically where I was, he was still coming over the edges. So, you know, I was just really stuck.
So he was 2 kilohertz wide of useful information and 4 more of junk. And so even though you looked at the 2 kilohertz you needed, it was being overlapped by part of the junk. Yeah, well, I mean, you can't filter it out, you can't null it out with an antenna movement. The other is turning the dial farther away from people like that.
Yeah, I suppose so. It was a case of, you know, like I'm sitting 2K below him, and he's going further beyond that. Yeah, so it's just like, even if I narrow it down, there's just so much sitting over the top of me, I just couldn't get there.
Oh, sure. No, I understand. It's very frustrating. There are radios with tighter filtering, but, you know, if he's over the top and not getting there because your filters aren't unduly wide, but because he's unduly widened in the passband that you need, well, then he's in the passband that you need, and that's the way it is. You have to fix it.
Yeah, so I think I'll drop an email and say, yeah, your shack problems are going a little bit further.
Okay, well, I don't have anything more to add to that. We've all lived through this story, and we will probably be lucky enough to live through it again. Any other thoughts from anybody else?
Was the station that was interfering you with you, you don't know how much power he was running. You don't know if it was the radio or whether it was overdriving an amplifier. 2KC away is doable with a modern radio, with a bandpass tuning, and a 3KC front end filter. But not everybody has one like that. But even if the guy is in your passband, it ain't going to help. But if the if the interference is from the fact that your radio's skirts are too wide, then using the passband tuning may help. But we've all gone through this, and we've all had guys who did that, and you just can't live with it. You cannot work somebody when someone's right smack on top of you. But on 75 meters, we run nets with we're only 2KC away. And, if you run a clean signal, you can do it. Back to you.
Travis? Yeah. I think he was running 400 watts, which was a strange number to me for what he was running. I'm running 100 watts, so I just can't, compete against him. So, yeah, maybe he is actually just running 400 and overdriving.
Well, if he was running 400 watts... probably was using a solid-state amplifier. Solid-state amplifiers are, down in that power level, 500 watts, 1,000 watts, not too many, 2 kW, like a tube amplifier. The technology has not really gotten to the point where those solid-state amplifiers are all that clean. Anybody who's ever experienced that would tell you that. The last thing you want is another ham in your neighborhood with a solid-state amplifier.
Well, that's funny because it's like, amplifiers have been on my thoughts. And, I see solid-state versus, like tubes. I'm sort of wondering which way to go. Going to have to research it and do a lot of thought on.
Well, I can tell you, from operating stations on field day and operating stations close together and stuff like that, that the anything that's tube type that isn't overdriven is going to be significantly cleaner than a solid-state amplifier. Maybe they'll get there, but right now I don't think they are.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like I used to do a lot of work, recording work back in the day, and we used to use old valve amps for that. The solid state, the MOSFETs were nice, but a lot of warmth, a lot more stability on the tubes. The only problem is, trying to get replacements.
Yeah, well, all you had to do is get on the air in the contest or something, and you just, we were getting killed on field day from people who were overdriving either amplifiers and or finals, in their transceiver. And, you just hope that it goes away, but that's the nature of the beast. Not everybody knows how to tune and operate a radio correctly. Some people turn all the knobs to the right.
Yeah, I have to admit I'm one of those ones that's like, I'm still learning this, so yeah, everything goes to 11. I'll send it back, KT2UNH, KT2VAR back to that.
Okay, very good colloquy. Thank you very much. Mr. Paul, anybody else have a question, comment, or for sale or swap item for the net? Alrighty, just a reminder that tomorrow night at the Fairlawn Club we'll have some video of what we took on the beach from the fireworks, showing what the crowd looked like in daylight or twilight and in darkness with our cameras. And we'll have a little bit of a rundown, but we'll definitely bring the projector and show a couple of minutes of video. It should be fairly entertaining. And a reminder that the Sussex Hamfest on the Sussex County Fairgrounds is Sunday, and that I'll be packing up green poles. Anyone will want them, just give me a holler. In fact, if you want them without having to go to the Hamfest, let me know. Anyway, I want to thank everybody for the use of the repeater here and also for your check-ins tonight. Any other stations before we secure K2VAR? Alrighty, Thank you again, gentlemen. Thanks, Chestnut Ridge Radio. Go for the East Philly repeater. K2BAR, this is W2TTT. 7-3 and have a great night.
KC2UJL on the repeater.
Only got a minute or two. KC2UJO, W2TTT. Good evening. Name is Gordon.
Gordon, good evening, sir. How you feeling?
I am one tired puppy. I've been up since 5, and I am done. I'm going to look at some charts for a couple of minutes, and I'm going to crawl off to bed.
Okay. I'll let you get your Z's. I haven't been on the repeater. I've been involved with some other things, legal matters, but, you know, I got a QSL card from somebody. I got the card. Maybe you would know them. You got a minute?
Sure, go ahead.
Bill Peters? W-I-2-L-Y-P?
I got a QSL card from him just the other day.
I'm trying to put two and two together here. I speak to so many people sometimes, it's hard to remember everybody, you know?
Yep. That's, That would be, Will? I forget now. But I have his card down on the dining room table. It's a very nice card. But I can get that to you another time, okay?
W-I-2-L-Y-P.
Before the ladder truck on it, there are 5 inches.
Speak of the devil. W-I-2-L-Y-P. Thank you for the beautiful card. W-2-T-T-T.
W-2-T-T-T and K-C-2-U-J-L. Yeah, good evening, Gordon. I listened in on the net. Very informative. And Tony, we spoke about a week ago. I'm the retired firefighter from Jersey City that we talked about.
Okay. It's Bill, right?
That's correct.
Okay, you were in a lot of company, huh?
Actually, I was a chief my last 17 years.
Bravo, bravissimo. Firemen, you know, being a retired PD, firemen about the closest. If I got a tattoo on my right arm of St. Michael the Archangel. And in this day and age, a fireman, in my explanation, would be the closest thing to an angel.
W2TTT, Gordon, you have to drop out on this. I'll chat with Tony.
Yeah, I'm good for another 2 minutes, and then I'm going to crawl downstairs and go to bed. I am so done. This has been a tough week, and I got to get up tomorrow morning fairly early. So, mercifully, the TechNet didn't go to 11 o'clock tonight, so it's a little short even by my standards, but we'll get on with it. So thank you again for the card. Wow, I haven't had a card printed on photo paper in a long time.
Hey, W2TTT, yeah, I had gotten a card from Steve, KB2PIA, and I just threw that one together and printed it off my Kodak printer, and then because my call sign's a bit of a tongue twister, I sent it out to people I've written down in my book who I had spoken to. That's what's behind that.
Well, that's beautiful. It really is. All right, I gotta get to sleep. I really gotta get to sleep. But thanks again. W2TTT.
Hey, W2TTT, W-I-2-L-Y-P. 73 is going. Good net.
Okay, thanks again, W2TTT.
Take care, Gordon, and have and have some good winks.
Oh, I definitely will. I need sleep. WTTTT. Night, night, guys.
Night. KC2UJL. I still wear a St. Florian medal, which is the patron saint of the firefighters.
The funny thing about this picture, and I'll tell you why, is a buddy of mine who's is an iron worker. He's a motorcyclist, because I got to meet him, and, going back a long time ago when I was younger, but I worked at the World Trade Center before I got on the job, and, he's just retiring off of that job. He's retiring as an iron worker, steel worker. He's just at the finish, as they're finishing up on the World Trade Center, where it used to be, okay? And in the picture you have here is the fire engine and the two big lights that the mayor put up in place of the World Trade Center. It's, related somehow.
Yeah, they put them up occasionally on the anniversary of the 9/11 incident. That picture was taken by another firefighter, and I picked it up, and I thought it just it said a lot about, you know, with the New York City skyline and the fire department being my background and stuff. So I borrowed the picture and just put the rest of it together. So I thought it looked pretty appropriate.
We lost a lot of good men that day. I have a nephew, thank God he's still alive. He's with a fire company right near the World Trade Center, but he's still alive. He's going into his late 30s, early 40s. He's still on the job. He's still a fireman. Big boy. And he lost a lot of firemen. Boy, the boy. I don't know. You know, like I tell you, firemen, every time I see a fire truck or I see them in the supermarket, I have to walk up to them and either shake their hand or embrace them, because they are the last lifeline to anything that's, on this planet.
WI2LYP, well, I'm sure that everyone appreciates that, because I know when people would say that to me, I appreciated it too. And you're right. It's funny, we used to say that when something's going on in the city and the cops show up, one party or the other don't want to see the cops, but when something's going on and the fire department shows up, everybody's happy.
Believe it, Bill. Believe it. You're retired now, right?
Yeah, I've been out for 9 years now.
Friend of mine, my cousin, Al Fassler, who just recently passed away from cancer, who was brought up in New Jersey and was with the Lodi Fire Department. Then he went to Florida and joined the fireman in Florida. And then he got asthma. And from there, everything went downhill. He just recently passed away from cancer. But he's been a New Jersey boy for all his life, born and raised in Lodi. A lot of family there all over Jersey.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Lodi. It's not too far from where I am. And they have a pretty aggressive volunteer fire department out there, between them and Garfield. Two good outfits.
Now, what do you do now with your spare time? You're married? What do you do with all extra time on your hands?
Well, the first thing is I have grandchildren in Virginia, so do a lot of trips to Virginia, road trips. And I had done some consulting work, and I write for Fire Magazine, and I just keep myself busy, so... I don't let any grass grow.
All right, Bill. Hey, listen, I'm 65, Are we in the same category, or are you younger?
Same general boat. I'm 64. I just turned 64 in May, so close.
So, I got to say something to you. You know, I pay a lot of money for television. I remember a time that we used to put 300 ohm cable up and an antenna on the roof and watch, you know. There's two guys that I talked to, Bill, that used to work for CBS on another repeater. And they were very good friends with Walter Cronkite. And we, like, I catch them, like, early in the morning, and then they live in Tempa. And we talk about a lot of things, you know. They're older than I am. And I always tell them that I feel, at this time in my age, and what's going on in the world, I feel like I'm living in the twilight zone. Do you feel that way at all?
Well, I don't like to get into politics, but with the way the politics are going now, yeah, it certainly does feel like the twilight zone.
Talking to the president of my club, the Limar Club there, Richie, he was talking about this thing I saw Sunday on 60 Minutes, this woman who I think she's overseeing Mark Zuckerberg's operation with Facebook there. She's really, my God, she's so intelligent, it's, whatever.
WI2LYC for ID. It's things are really strange, and nobody knows what's happening, so it's kind of hold your breath. I don't know. The politics are all in it, the politicians are all in it for themselves. Here in New Jersey, you know, there's a big tax problem and all, and they go and they blame the cops and firemen. They went and cut out our cost of living increase, and you know, when you're retired and you're living on that, it's it hurts. But they let the city slide for 15 years, not pay in their half into the pension fund because the pension was doing good with all the stock market. And then when the stock market went down, all of a sudden they said, "Oh God!" They increased the pension contribution on the cops and firemen and cut out the cost of living increases. So, you know, they're balancing the pension fund on the back of the workers when, in fact, it was the politicians who gave the cities a pass on it.
Bill, I got to ask you a question then. I was watching, I watch Channel 2 every morning, and these people that live along the water in a certain part of New Jersey are suing New Jersey for millions of dollars because they're putting more sand in case of another hurricane, so their property will not be damaged. But they're suing the state because it's blocking their view of the ocean. Now, far be it from me, can you explain that?
Oh, you just explained it perfectly. That's exactly what's going on. But I think that the state Supreme Court said that the state was within their rights to put up a barrier to stop damage. So I don't know how far their lawsuit's going to go. But, you know, people are funny. I don't own any shore property. I never did, never could afford it. But apparently they have plenty of money if they're going to be suing the state and all because they have hurt feelings that their view is being damaged.
You know, I'm not going to make any comments. I don't live in Jersey. But I'm sure that if they hire some engineers, they can put up some kind of a concrete wall where they can walk out on this landing and overlook the ocean, and it would act as a barrier against water coming up on their property. Something in that, you know, just I'm just spitballing here. But I think the, what, the governor there, I think he's a pretty good guy. What do you think?
I did. I voted for him, but...